Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up and shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Well, good afternoon,
American,
to another Tuesday here on Southern Sense. Sitting here on Blog Talk Radio, I want to welcome everyone aboard. Our chat room is open. I want to welcome people into there. Also, our call-in line is open, which is 917-889-3675. And before we go into the show, I've got two quick announcements. One is for tonight, and I will be at this event because I am the leader of the Buford Tea Party. But between 6 and 7:30 p.m. tonight, at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, located at the Hargrave Building in the University of South Carolina Gateway Campus, that is the one in Bluffton, we're going to have a straw poll for the GOP nomination for president. Guest speaker will be our State Senator Tom Davis, who has been a guest on this program. He will have a short speech. Tim Scott, our representative, will also have a short video recorded announcement. And each of the GOP candidates have submitted a short 3-minute video, which they will play. And this is hosted by Hilton Head and then co-sponsored by the Bluffton and Buford Tea Parties. After the videos, then they will go into the straw poll. Now, it only seats 150 people, but you can still go and vote in the straw poll. There will be standing room also available. So that's going to be tonight. The other thing going on is the Island Charities is going to have a 10K, 5K walk run, and this is to benefit the Lowcountry Autism and the American Cancer Society. This specific event on November 19th is going to raise funds for Morgan Porter, who is a 3-year-old and is awaiting a heart transplant at the Medical University of South Carolina up in Charleston. Anyone interested in helping with this charity, if you can't attend the walk run on November 19th, the site that you can make a donation to is www.theisland.org www.southerncharities.com. And I will put that location up, that website up inside the chat room later on during the show. In the interim, we were supposed to have a guest today. And, of course, you know, best laid plans of mice and men often go astray. And, unfortunately, our guest had gotten sick. And it's cold and flu season, so, of course, he comes down with a bad cold, gets laryngitis. So it's very difficult to talk on the radio if you don't have your voice. So our guest, Mr. Constitution, Mike Holler, who is the author of Constitution Made Easy, is not here today. But he will come back again as soon as he is feeling well and he's able to speak. So back by popular demand, Mike Holler will return in the near future. As soon as I know, I will shoot out an email to everyone and let you know so you can tune in. In the interim, we've got a friend of ours who has volunteered to be our guinea pig today, and I want to welcome Claire Van Steenwijk. Did I say your last name correctly?
Steenwijk.
Steenwijk, okay, who is running for U.S. Senate in Arizona. And I want everyone to listen into him because this is the man that can send John McCain home. And let's cross our fingers and hope that's going to happen. Good afternoon, Van. Van, the radio man here on BTR.
Good afternoon. Well, I can't exactly send him home because I'm not running against him. He just got reelected. But I can definitely clip his wings, which is what I intend to do.
Uh-huh. And those are some pretty broad wings.
Yeah, well, they're a little tattered from our perspective, and most of the people in the state believe that as well. There were people last time that voted for him because they unfortunately did that, you know, what they thought was the better two evil theory, which I totally disagree with. I've never seen a good evil.
But unfortunately, if you don't vote for the better of two evils, then you allow the evil to get into office.
Yeah. No, well, the better of two evils, they're both evil. See, I've never figured that one out. When you look the word up in the dictionary, there's no good evil there. And that's the problem. We've settled for what over the years they say, well, you have to settle for this because you can't get that. You know, if you really think about our history in this country, when did we settle for anything? Let's see, we're going to go to the moon, but we'll settle for the beach. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to have electricity, but we're going to just keep burning candles.
Unfortunately, we've got the administration in there now. It's not even a better of two evils. It's do what I say. His Excellency has been passing executive order after executive order. And I don't think there's any president that has passed as many as he has, and it's over 100 at the last count I had.
Yeah, but how many of those executive orders are policy and how many of those executive orders are legislative? That's the question.
I would say a large majority seems to be legislative.
And they can all be revoked under the Constitution. You're not allowed to do that.
Can he be impeached with all these executive orders?
Well, if it's considered treasonous, yes, but most people wouldn't go that far. But I do believe that what people really need to look at is put people in office, both in the Senate and the Congress. Have you heard of that new group called Reno?
No.
It's called Reelect No One. And if you really think about some of the people we just elected in 10, did they vote to raise the debt ceiling?
Yeah.
Is that what they promised to do?
Nope.
Then why would we reelect them?
I don't know. I'm pulling up this thing. Reelect no one?
Reelect no one. I was handed a card on it. I don't have it with me right now. I gave a bunch of them away at an event I was at. Wait a minute. Here's one. Reelect no one. Yeah, it just says reelect no one. It doesn't have a .org, .com, nothing. It's just don't get mad, get even, reelect no one. All incumbents out is what it says. That's what someone handed me. I don't know if someone printed these up. I was told I've been given these at different places, so somebody's moving this idea along. I've changed it a little bit with REOPNO, reelect or promote no one. Because these people that want to go from the Congress to the Senate, what have they done to deserve that? I got promoted on jobs when I did my job properly. I wouldn't say the debt is a properly done job. I wouldn't say raping Social Security for the last, 40-plus years from the days of Johnson is exactly what I call a conservative as far as fiscal responsibility goes. When you know you're spending money on things that you're taking out of a benefit that we've paid into, that we're entitled to, that other people aren't entitled to have. But you've taken the money from people that paid into it to give it to people that paid nothing.
Mm. Van, we do have a caller coming in. This is Thomas, and he has his own show here on BTR known as The Invisible Conservative, but now he's calling himself The Visible Conservative. Good afternoon, Thomas.
Hey, Annie. How are you?
I know that you've got school today, so I didn't want to leave you on hold for too long.
Oh, no, it's fine. I like this gentleman in from Arizona, because I'm personally of the belief that we need to get behind senator candidates, House candidates, not just from our own states, but from everywhere. I have a friend, Kirk Cleaver, who's running in Texas. I have my friend Willie Lawson, you know Willie, who's running for city council down in Tampa, Florida, in Hillsborough County, and, you know, I've just been associated with quite a few other people. But I'm just excited to hear people who are running on constitutional values and not just because they want to get in office to gain power.
That's the last of my problems. I'm coming out of retirement to run for office.
Oh, wow.
I was comfortably retired. We'd been retired. We retired early. We did pretty well in business, in the business I worked at, plus we owned a number of properties. We did fairly well. We retired. And I've been doing radio for a number of years, AM in L.A. and Florida and Idaho, and now here in Phoenix.
Oh, okay.
And basically political talk and done issues. I also do events and MC things and promote things and try to help, you know, like we had a program this past Sunday, no, 2 weeks ago, this Sunday at Chase Field. It's called Run Drugs Out of Our Town Run. We had kids from 2 years old up running around the track and the bases. They got medals, like a gold medal with a red, white, and blue ribbon around it with T-shirts.
That's cool.
And discuss to them, don't get involved in this and why, and other issues as well. But and we did a Saluting Patriots concert back in August to raise money for veterans here that we sponsored. But my concern is the factor that we elect people to do one thing, and they, I don't believe they believe it when we elect them, quite honestly. Because
right.
someone says, how do they change back there? It's because they never believed it. They said
right.
it, they didn't believe it. You believe from your heart, you think from your head, and we have way too damn many thinkers back there.
Exactly.
We need to take this government apart stick by stick.
I agree with that as well. And I say start with the establishment on both sides of the aisle.
Oh, yeah.
The more I observe both sides of the aisle, the more I realize there's no difference. And I don't consider the establishment GOP conservative any longer. They may be conservative, but, you know, just to kind of give you a little bit of my background, I support the GOP for one reason only, because of what their founding principles were. I am a black conservative. So therefore, because of that, I have to support the very institution that was founded in opposition to slavery. But it's kind of ironic that the establishment GOP has forgotten their roots. I had I interviewed Pastor Wayne Perryman on my show about a month ago. He's the gentleman, along with Francis Rice out of Florida, who's suing President Obama and the Democratic Party for racism against black people. And he was telling me about he spoke at the 2004, I believe it was the GOP convention. And he asked the audience if they knew the significance of the year. And nobody, not even the candidates, knew the significance of the year. And that was the 150th anniversary of the founding of the GOP. And so to me, that's kind of disgusting to me when the establishment GOP don't even realize that the party was founded in opposition to slavery. And to me, that makes it very noble, and that's why I support the root beliefs, the root tenets of the GOP.
I support the tenants, but I don't believe the people that carry the name for the most part do, and I am a Republican. If you go to my website, it's called VanForUSSenate.com.
Okay.
I've got a flyer on there. It's got a an elephant's head with a jackass's back end on it. It's called I call it Republicrats with an X across it. And then I've got the target on a bullseye target on a rhino. It's called the Rhino Hunter. The Republican Party in Arizona is not a real fan of mine. Even though I am a Republican and very active, I'm a PC and a state committeeman in the Republican Party, mm-hmm. has helped a number of Republicans get elected, some to my disappointment. But for the most part, I believe it's time for the voters of America. I was in Sierra Vista last night at the Cochise County Republican headquarters there,
mm-hmm.
and spoke with Matt and Bush and Butch and Jerry and Doc and a bunch of other people that were kind enough to invite me there, and were kind enough to listen to me for close to 2 hours and ask for questions that I hope thoroughly. Although I'm finding out a couple of things on my website weren't quite clear, so I'm clearing those up right now, such as the Second Amendment. I'm gonna share this with you, and you tell me if this works, okay?
Okay.
The Second Amendment is part of my issues. It's very
right.
clear what it says, and at the very end of it, I write, "I believe this is all that needs to be done to protect our rights." In other words, it is what it is. But someone didn't know if I really was clear enough. So what I wrote to add to that, I believe that since our unalienable rights are granted to us by God, which by the way are unreversible.
Right.
God states very clearly he never changes, then neither do or can the rights he bestowed on us. I therefore would not ever support any legislation by anyone to alter these rights in any form.
Right.
Think that's clear enough?
You can't get any more clearer than that.
I love it, Ben. You're actually typing this in as you're talking to us.
Yes, I am. I was questioned on this morning. A gentleman who was kind enough to help me get the engagement or the opportunity to speak to people said a couple people had emailed and they went to the website and read this, and they weren't sure that I was, what I meant by what I said. And I said the Constitution guarantees that the government will not take away the rights God has given us. We need only to defend and protect the Constitution as our founding fathers set it up, and we'll be just fine. This, I believe, is all that needs to be done to protect our rights. This
right.
apparently wasn't clear enough. So I've added to that to say, I believe that since our unalienable rights are granted to us by God, which, by the way, are unreversible, or I should put irreversible, shouldn't I? Yeah, here. I always do that. I make up words as I go along. Are irreversible since God states very clearly he never changes. And in the Bible it does say that. I'm the same yesterday, today, tomorrow, and forever.
That's right.
His word will never change. And I believe he doesn't change what he gives us. He says,
right.
I give it to you to keep. He doesn't take it away. We can screw it up, but he don't take it away. And
right.
since he's the only one that can, I don't have the right to do it. I'm not God.
Exactly.
I mean, it's one of the commandments. It says, thou shalt not have any other God before me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. When you start taking away things he gives you, you think you're God.
Well, that's our.
I don't have that problem.
President, that's our.
I know
president.
I'm not God. Don't want to be. Never intended to be. So therefore, I figure this makes it about as clear as I can, and I think I'll just do a little add to it, and just put God bless you all. Parentheses fan.
Right.
That should clear it up, and if that don't do it, I don't know what will.
Right.
Save the change of yes.
Right.
I'll email it to my web manager and have her attach that to the Second Amendment, because I'm not going to have this problem. I'm not going to have people thinking I'm vague on anything, because I'm definitely not very vague.
Right. And you know what you can do with that.
By the way, you just before I forget, because you said something about you have people and I want to share this with both of you on the air.
Okay.
That that are running for Congress and the Senate, you said, U.S. Senate?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I'm forming a group out of Arizona. I've got three senators that have agreed to join now and a couple of Congress people running, new
mm-hmm.
people.
Right.
And we're going to formate what I call a contract to return America to Americans, okay?
Okay.
Or to reverse the mess these idiots have been doing for the last 100 years, I guess is another way to put it. But we're going to form a contract which is binding upon all of us to agree to certain things we will do and certain things we won't do, such as we're going to go through all the amendments these idiots have been writing and laws they've been writing and departments they've been setting up and structure them according to the Constitution, and anything that doesn't bear fruit there that's not constitutional needs to be dissolved.
Right.
Immediately. We're also going to put in legislation to cut spending by 2.5% and cut employment by 2.5% at the same time, along with the regular attrition at 2.5% for 5 years, and freeze all wages, bonuses, benefits of any type to anybody other than military for 5 years as well. I believe if we do it this way, within 5 years, our government will be about 30% smaller.
Wow.
Yeah, within 5 years.
Wow.
Now you can get the congressional staff to cut back on their perks. That'd be
They're going to get fired.
Woo, I like that. Because.
Okay. And I'm also we're also going to set in there where the states determine the benefits of all their employees, and that includes congressmen and senators, not the federal government. I'm an employee of the state of Arizona should I be elected. I'm not an employee of D.C.
That's
elected
very true.
By the state. So
yeah,
therefore, the
true.
state, the legislator, the voters of the state I represent should be the ones that decide how much I earn and what my benefits are, and I should not be subject to any law that a citizen of the same state that I represent is subject to. These things have to be put there because these ding-dongs think they're God.
Right.
Okay? And I don't intend to be God, and I don't intend to stay there a whole long time either. I want to go back there, get this thing fixed, and retire.
Mm.
Okay.
That brings me up to your opponent, Mr. Flake.
Oh, boy.
He said he was only going to run for a set number of terms, but he's been three terms. And how many terms has he been in there now?
He's in his fifth. He was going after his sixth when Mr. Kyle announced he was going to retire, and he jumped from running for Congress to running for the Senate without even taking a breath.
Whoa.
Wow.
So in essence, for lack of a better way of saying this, the man's a liar.
that's blunt. That's blunt.
Tell me, if you give your word, correct?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you break it, what does that make you?
A liar.
Gosh, that's simple.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, Ben, we've got another caller coming in. Let me bring this person aboard. Area code 906, you are on the air live with Southern Sense. To whom am I speaking?
Mr. Magic Biz.
I'm Mr. Magic. How are you doing this afternoon? You're live here with Van, Claire
Just Van. Just
Van.
I'm running as Van for U.S. Senate, so that makes it simpler for everybody.
Oh, Van the Radio Man.
With my whole name, it drives people nuts.
What is your question, Mr. Magic?
I had a question going back just a few minutes about the cuts that he was talking about, and I'd like to have some more specifics on whether those were governmental cuts, or were they austerity measures for the general public, or what's the story there?
You're talking about the 2.5%?
Yeah.
Okay, the 2.5% is an automatic cut in all the wages in Washington and all the benefits and all the bonuses for all employees except for the armed services. The freeze goes for 5 years. There'll be freeze on all hiring and all packages, no bonus, nothing. 5 years, freeze, automatic. There's a natural attrition from the numbers I was given. If they're correct, then I'm going by what information I'm given, so it could be a point one way or the other. We have a natural attrition within the federal bureaus, all of them, of approximately 2.5% a year where people either quit or retire or die. Well, that's a form of quitting. Anyway, you take that 2.5%, okay, that is natural to them. Then you start cutting every department by 2.5% at the same time. You have a 5% cut every year in all existing departments that are left. That gives you a 25% cut in 5 years, doesn't it?
Yeah, that does.
Of the federal government. That does not include, and understand this, that does not include what I believe also would be going after departments that are unconstitutional, such as the Department of Education, the Department of Energy, OSHA, EPA, Commerce, Parks, and the Fed, even though it's not a federal department. The Fed needs to be audited. People need to go to jail. It needs to be dissolved. And then you set up state banks nationally. Okay, and we also need to pass the fair tax and get rid of the IRS. Real simple. Those reductions will bring our government down by anywhere from 40 to 45% in 5 years.
Oh, what's your opinion of Herman Cain's 999 plan?
I don't like it.
Okay.
Because I'll tell you basically why. I don't dislike that. For one, I think it's too damn high. Because I realize that if you do the fair tax, okay,
mm-hmm.
the fair tax gives you approximately a 23% tax, right?
Mm-hmm.
999, if my math is right, if I haven't forgotten how to add or multiply, is 27%. So he's 4% over. Plus, he does something I don't like. When you do the 999, you leave the IRS intact to collect it. That particular government agency has a lobbying arm that goes to Congress for new legislation constantly. How did everybody think that book got so damn big?
Yep.
All right. Now, okay. I did read the 999 plan, which is very short, very sweet. His is using it as a premise to then bring in the fair tax. But what I saw in the plan was I didn't see any triggers so that once the fair tax goes in that you don't have a 9% income tax anymore. You don't have a 9% sales tax
anymore.
I know,
but here's the thing with the fair tax. Once the fair tax is passed, okay,
mm-hmm.
once it's passed, the IRS is gone. There doesn't have to be a trigger. It's just gone. And it's implemented. It doesn't. You don't need to implement 999. Just do the fair tax. You're done. You kill two birds with one stone. You lower the tax rate automatically. It's gone. It goes down. You eliminate a bunch of taxes you don't need, such as, well, one of them would be Social Security, but and others. But you eliminate, you know, all the taxes you don't need. Your death tax, all of that. Everything's gone. You're at a simple tax. You base rate it that way, and you're fine. And like I said, the IRS is gone. That devil needs to be gone. I mean, you know how big that – think about the savings the American public will have just in that.
Right.
Just in that, just out of our pockets, not to mention the taxes we pay to fund those ding-dongs.
Now, the problem with now getting rid of the IRS, that puts a huge hole in Obamacare, doesn't it?
I don't care. I want Obamacare gone. Obamacare is illegal.
Don't we all? Don't we all?
No, Obamacare is illegal on its face.
Right, right.
Hey. You cannot tell me to be a citizen. I have to buy something.
Right.
Which is the premise why it's going to the Supreme Court at this point. Supreme Court has agreed to listen to it. They're going to take 5.5 hours of arguments, and they say they should have a decision by next summer.
Yep.
They should have a decision by next week.
Yeah, is that
it should
simple?
Be 5 minutes after the arguments end.
The argument should take about 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's unconstitutional. Read it. Of course,
right.
It's 2,000 pages, so that would take a while.
Right.
See, actually, I can say honestly that I have read the House and the Senate version before it was even passed, and I was writing articles about it as far back as July of 2009, stating the points of unconstitutionality on it.
Well, what do you think about those 2 pages that cover marriage?
Wait,
beneficial not to get married.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I sat down, I did the math, and I said, you know, honey, if it wasn't for the fact that I would lose your Social Security should you pass away, I said, what's the point of staying married? If we get divorced, we get a higher income tax deduction. It's a higher salary before the taxes start kicking in, and we get a better benefit on it health-wise. I said, what's the point of staying married?
Wow. See, I didn't hear that one.
That's also in Obama's jobs bill. Again, he did it so that if you stay single, you get a higher benefit. That's in the jobs bill also.
That's right. So what does that tell you is going to happen? Isn't that kind of what they did with the welfare program with Johnson, where if you kick the husband out, you got money?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's really worked well in the black community, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
If you think about it, if you look what that's done to the black family,
right.
It's devastated that community. You have children growing up without fathers,
right.
No male image in the home. That's why they end up being in gangs and in prisons and all the rest of the nonsense that goes on in those communities. People
right.
live in fear. I know I used to work on Skid Row in L.A., and people sit on their floors watching TV for fear some punk with a bandana on his head is going to shoot at them.
Right.
I mean, this is nuts. That was Johnson's great society that, by the way, he financed by unlocking Social Security, which, by the way, the Republicans helped him vote for.
Yep.
So, yeah. I mean, you look at all this nonsense, and what is that, Planned Parenthood?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
What's that lady's name?
Margaret Sanger.
That woman. You know what she said about blacks, right?
Yes, I do. I've done, oh, boy.
Yeah. I've done these shows, too, and that's my point. This and they hold this up like she was a great person.
Exactly.
The woman hated blacks.
Yes,
hated
she
them.
Did.
Okay? And that whole institution is bred from that. It needs to be totally taken out, taken down, and destroyed.
Right.
They have killed. See, I have a Christian view on this, not just a moral view, but a Christian view. People pray every day that God heals cancer or some other disease and that God, you know, finds a cure, right?
Right.
How many babies have they possibly killed that he put the genes in to find the cure that are now not here?
That's a good point. That's
how many?
Well, let's see.
How many inventions don't we have? How much progress haven't we made because of the hundreds of millions of babies that have been destroyed?
Right.
Exactly. And that's an
legislation.
That was an argument I gave exactly when Steve Jobs recently passed away. And what I didn't know was that he happened to have been an adoption. And as soon as I heard out he was adopted, I looked at my husband and said, just think, if that mother had aborted that child, what would our world look like today?
Yeah.
You know, between computers, cell phones, and other innovations he has come up with, would someone else have stepped in and created these things? Or would we have had to wait another 50 years for someone to be born to think these things up? I said, how much talent is being lost every single day?
Right. You know, that's kind of personal to me, because when I was born, the doctors, I was born a year after abortion was legalized, and the doctors had told my mom she needed to get an abortion. The truth was because she had already had three kids, and back then sterilization was still legal and all that stuff. Anyway, my mom said no. So when I was 6 months old, I was taken away by the state and sterilized as a baby. So my question that I've always had for those pro-choice people who says it's a woman's choice or people have the right to choose, my question to them is, where was my choice whether or not I wanted to be sterilized as a baby or not?
Yeah, where was it? Have they found it?
Apparently not, because I'm still looking for it.
Yeah.
Well, Ben,
yeah.
We got a friend of ours also finally joined us, my co-host, Cool Mike. Good afternoon, Mike.
Hello, Mike.
Hey. Hello, guys. And, Ben, thank you so much for joining us. Sorry I'm a little late. I want to throw a question Van's way, which I think is really, really important. He's obviously running against money. And when we're talking against money and then the Republican ticket, he's running against guys who are beyond filthy rich.
Yeah, way beyond. Well, the one has 2.2 in the bank. The other one just deposited $770,000, and some other people match it with another 440. So we're looking at about $3.5 million between two people.
I can't even fathom that. I'm almost like swallowing my tongue. Ben, why should someone flipping burgers making $7-$10 an hour, or whatever? Why vote for Van the Radio Man instead of another candidate?
Because I tell the truth. Whether you like it or not, I'm going to tell you the truth, and I'm going to do what I say I'm going to do, whether they like it or not. This is not a career for me. I had one. Like I said, I was comfortably retired, doing radio and activities, raising money, helping other people get elected, still doing some charitable work, perfectly content doing this, until I watched what continued to go on, and when they popped these two people, Mr. Flake and Mr. Cardin, up to run, one from one side of the radical left and one from the other, and looked at that and thought, this ain't right, and tried to get a couple conservatives to run who told me they wouldn't do it because of the money. And the fact that if they lost, the people with that kind of money would never help them run again. And then people came to me and said, well, hey, Van, why don't you do it? You know what the issues are. You've written papers on it. You know how to do this. Why don't you do it? You've helped other people. And we talked about it and prayed about it. And miraculously, right at that time, we'd been trying to sell a house for over, 3 years. Suddenly it sold.
Wow, I'm not surprised.
Then we had the opportunity for me to buy my first new car in a few years because of the economy, and I had to make a choice between a new car, and doing this. So we stuck $3,000 or $3,500 in the car we have and started running.
Wow.
That's it for me.
Now, Van, besides you're up here on Blog Talk Radio, known as Van the Radio Man, you're also up on Twitter and Facebook. What are those sites?
That's Van for U.S. Senate. It's also Crossroads with Van. It's also Claire Van Steenwijk. I think that's it. And Van the Radio Man. And I'm also on 1010 AM KXXT in Phoenix locally on AM show. We do a simulcast with you. And believe it or not, as hard as this may be to believe, even for me, okay, today I'm going to be interviewed today on the radio.
Yeah,
on NBC radio here locally, which is, my gosh, what is that radio station? I can't believe I don't even remember my own name.
Yeah, you have it up on your website. And
yeah, I do. It's 1260 AM, and I think it's 96.1 FM, if my memory serves right.
That is correct. You got it at 1260 AM or 96.1 FM, and that's out of Arizona, right?
Out of Arizona at 5 o'clock our time, which is 7 o'clock your time, 6 o'clock Midwest, and 4 o'clock California.
All right, I'm going to copy that link and put that up in the chat room.
And I have no idea. I've never met this guy. He friended me on Facebook. I sent him a video we put together with me talking about the campaign and what we're trying to do and change. Said, if you agree with us, help us take our country back. And he said, I agree. You want to be on the show? So I've never met him. I don't know what kind of questions he's going to ask me. I've never heard him. So this is going
to
be
When it comes to interviews, Van, you and Annie have a lot in common, because I met Van, Annie. He was grilling Mike Price, who's running for U.S. Senate. I was just like, if I were this dude, I'd hang up. He was like, you got to respect that. Look, I mean, you come on a show, you got to be able to slug it out. And politics is a dirty business. And, you know, Van, I'm kind of going to be facetious and sarcastic here, but I'm going to throw another thing out there. You are a member of the Tea Party.
I was the president of the Greater Phoenix Tea Party for a while.
Well, according to people like Maxine Waters, the Klan and racists and these bigots and, all the names. She calls people like me and you and Annie. How do you respond to all these, what horrible people we are from a lady such as Maxine Waters?
Waters. Oh, I know that, nitwit. Let me put it to you like this. I used to work on Skid Row. We had an outreach ministry on Skid Row and Hollywood Boulevard, helping, drunks and teenage kids that were runaways. We also ran a Christian halfway house and coffee house. I also did teaching seminars throughout L.A. We also did outreach work in New Mexico in little villages just south of Ensenada, where they lived in cardboard shacks and plywood houses and tin houses. So I don't think my compassion is questionable from her perspective. Most of the people I helped were not of my heritage.
Right.
Okay? Some were white, some were black. In Mexico, they were all Hispanic. And I don't speak Spanish, so that was fun, taking food down there and clothes and Bibles. But we did it. We did it for years. And we never got a dime from any government agency, never got a dime from any church. It was money myself and my wife earned through our employment. We had pretty good jobs, and we lived frugally, is what I call it. And so we were able to take the excess of our income and spend it on other people.
See, now that's spreading the wealth.
The woman is just a flat-out nutcase. I mean, she ought to be. Someone ought to take her out and do some. I don't know. She don't belong in office. She ought to be sent to Cuba or Russia or some damn place.
Well, right. Van, Mr. Magic has a question. Mr. Magic, what's your question for Van?
Not so much a question as a comment, if I may.
All right.
Okay. First of all, regarding the Obamacare. And the article that Southern Sense referred to, I did read that article, and I did research it. It appears that it's a split decision between, the judges up there, okay? These are supposedly the highest judges in the land, okay? And you don't have to be a brain surgeon, to know, what's constitutional and what is not, and I know you did mention that it probably wouldn't take any more than, 2 minutes to cover this. Why they have not thrown this out completely because of its constitutionality, okay, and because it's illegal, okay, in my mind is because they're eventually going to be bought and paid for to pass this thing, okay.
Then they need to be removed from office.
Exactly. On another note, the latest figures I have are from 2008. It appears that the average cost of winning a seat in the United States Senate in 2008 was $1.1 million. Okay? The average cost of winning a seat I'm sorry, that was the House of Representatives. In the United States Senate, the average cost in 2008 was $6.5 million, okay? Obviously, in 2008, our housing market had crashed big time. There's not a lot of people that are donating to elect people and put them in office. You know, I'm going to assume, which is a bad thing to do, that a lot of this money came from corporate entities, okay? Also, on a final note here, the percentage of millionaires in Congress is 50 times higher than it is for the general population, okay? Because they have pretty much legalized insider trading, in which they can, you know, create, you know, tons and tons of money. There is nobody in our government that is broke.
No, that's very, very true, Mr. Magic. We got another caller, Van, that I'm going to bring in now. They've been sitting patiently on hold. Area code 510, you're on the air live with Southern Sense, and Van, the radio man for Senate. Hello, 510?
Oh, I'm just listening.
Oh, okay. Then I'm going to put you back on hold, and you can listen in. Thank you so much for calling in. All right, Van, there is a new book out by Peter Schweitzer. What's it called? It talks about how Congress is not subject to the same laws that the normal person is, and he gives examples where there's a lot of insider trading that you or I would have been sitting in prison for, but our senators and representatives are parlaying what they know about legislation in certain companies and making millions upon millions of dollars. John Kerry is one perfect example, and Al the Boer Gore. I'm trying to remember what the heck the name of the book is. I think it's Kick the Bums Out.
Okay.
But I think that that's what people are doing. They're getting themselves elected to Congress and the Senate just so that they can make themselves millions of dollars.
Well, it's not a bad job if you can get it, is it?
No. No, courtesy of our tax dollar, too.
No, but that's the problem. We've got – they don't serve us anymore, okay? And we allow this to go on. So my real question is, whose fault is it? Is it theirs for being crooks and liars and normal people? Or is it ours for continually settling for the better of two evils? See, that's my issue with this. It's what we're settling for, what we've been willing to accept over the years now and tolerate. This is intolerable. We keep accepting this. I don't see that to me is crazy.
No,
Ben, how would you evaluate John McCain's career as a senator? You live in Arizona.
He's a failure.
I like it. You're so direct. Short and sweet.
Think about it. I have people talk to me about this all the time. Okay? They don't like a lot of his foreign policy. They don't care for how he never brings, you know, you know what earmarks are, right?
Oh, yeah. We all know.
Well, now, explain an earmark to me. If I pay taxes in the state of Arizona to the federal government, right, and you're a sitting congressman or senator, and you have the ability to write legislation to bring some of our own money back to us to benefit the state, would you call that an earmark? Or would you call that a tax refund?
I would call that a tax refund if you bring our tax dollars back to our state.
So would I. But John, as we know, doesn't like earmarks. Neither does Mr. Flake. So anytime they get a chance to do this, they don't do it in the guise of pork barrel spending or earmarks. And yet we've got roads we need to fix here and other things, but they don't mind fixing these roads in other places. So, you know, it's disingenuous on its face. It really is. But nobody deals with them. And my question is why?
No, it's interesting because we've had Representative Joe Wilson bring funds back and Lindsey Graham bring funds back to South Carolina here specifically to upgrade and rebuild the port in Charleston. And they caught a lot of flack for it, but what they're doing is they're bringing money back into the state to create jobs.
Right.
But they're not creating government jobs. They're creating jobs, helping create jobs in the private sector.
What's wrong with those guys?
We don't need to increase more government jobs. We need less, like you said. Reduce it by 5%. Use the 2.5% attrition and cut departments by 2.5%. We need to expand on the private sector. What's your take on subcontracting some of these things that government is now doing? Say, for example, handling unemployment insurance and things like that.
I personally believe, as far as here's one deal. Social Security disability, right?
Mm-hmm.
It didn't used to be. It didn't used to exist at all, anywhere. What you're supposed to have is like work. You know what Chile just did, where they took it all and made it private again?
I'm not exactly familiar with it. I've heard Herman Cain talk about it. I haven't gone into that.
It's actually in the black. It's making money. Everybody said they were crazy for doing it. If you get hurt on the job, you have workman's comp, right?
Right.
If you get hurt permanently, that should pay you permanently, shouldn't it?
Right.
And if you're fortunate enough to get a $10 million loss, a settlement because you've lost two legs or whatever it is, not that I'd like that to happen, why then do you go into Social Security disability and get paid again? It should be a private thing only, and if you get hurt in a car accident or at home, you've got private insurance. And then if anything goes wrong after that, you know, if you can't work forever, let them pay you forever if you don't make a settlement. When you hit 65, which I believe is what the retirement age should be, 65 to 67, and that has to be adjusted, then when you're legally allowed to collect Social Security, okay, you collect it with no penalty for being hurt when you were, say, 25. But whatever the difference is between what you actually would have gotten and what you could have gotten is made up by the private sector, your workman's comp, or your private auto or home insurance policy, not by other people who've paid into it for 40 years. That's how it should work. But the government likes to make everybody kind of dependent on them. So they've put all these perks in over the years, and they've saved the insurance companies, may I add, billions of dollars by doing it. Probably trillions of dollars, if the truth were known.
Now that's an interesting concept. I completely agree. I honestly think that to begin with, half this tax money we send to the federal government shouldn't even be going to them. It should go to the state and let the state monitor the programs. Let the state decide how to handle the welfare program, unemployment, Social Security, and so on and so on and so forth. I don't think those funds should have ever gone up to the federal level.
No, they never should have.
It's become such a bureaucracy. Van, what about departments? What departments are you in favor of keeping? What departments are you in favor of cutting?
I'm in favor of keeping any departments you can prove constitutionality, which doesn't include energy, doesn't include, OSHA, EPA, doesn't include education, commerce, doesn't include... There's another one here. Oh, Department of Parks and Recreation or National Park System, whatever you want to call it. And there are others. We've developed so damn many agencies, it's ridiculous. And they're not constitutional. The government basically has one job, and that's to defend us and secure our borders. They're not doing that real well.
They're doing nothing. And that was my criticism of your guy, John McCain. I mean, he's running for president, and that is a constitutional duty of all federal officials to protect the states of America from invasion. And that half-witted, dimrod, clueless moron, George W. Bush, that absolute failure liberal, I mean, you either love this country or you don't love this country. You either follow the Constitution or you
could
don't.
Could you be a little more clear about Mr. Bush, please?
The bottom line is, led by George Bush, almost single-handedly almost destroyed the Republican Party.
He worked on it real hard.
Well, I mean, the Democrats never really won. It was more or less like the Republicans lost it. Or no, the Republicans sold out to basically the fat cats. And the bottom line is what we are just getting back to the original question is it's a constitutional duty to protect the states of America from invasion. And he gets out there and wants to, all of a sudden make the people who are here illegally, let's work it out so they can stay. Realistically, we know not everyone's going to leave. But if you start illegal, they still look for criminals, last I checked.
Last time I looked, that's what they were doing.
And I don't understand why George Bush is so why he was so weak on this issue. First of all, in many ways, certain groups of people will never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, vote for the Republicans. No matter what you ever do, they'll never, ever, ever be happy. So why try to appease them when they're never going to support you? You know, you got to have the attitude Pat Buchanan had. Well, then don't vote for me. That was his. Everyone stood still when he said, well, you know, there are other people running. And
Mike,
we've
got
to secure the borders.
Mike, we got Mr. Magic who has one more short question. Mr. Magic, what's your question?
For your guest speaker that you have there, I'm not going to go over my background. Many of you know the time I've spent researching and stuff. But, you know, it's very easy, and most of you will agree with me, that the United States is, you know, not just the United States anymore. I mean, we're talking about our big...
I think we lost Mr. Magic. Mr. Magic's magic went out the window. His call was dropped. So, Mr. Magic, if you're out there listening, call back in. One of the things I was looking at, your website is pretty intensive, and I love it. But on social issues, I see here, let me bring this back up again. You are definitely for marriage defined as a man and a woman. My whole to-do is I don't think government should be in marriage, period.
I don't think they should either.
Exactly.
I was simply stating what I believe. I don't believe in passing legislation from the federal government down. These are state issues to be decided by the cities and the counties and the state and the people that live in them, and not to be overturned by a bunch of ding-dongs with black robes that sit up in Sacramento.
No, exactly. Now, what people were complaining about is whether or not they could get the social and government benefits if they were a couple. All right, what you do in your bedroom is your own business. See, I'm here where I say, all right, fine, you want to recognize civil unions so that, you know, a gay couple can get each other's benefits and have visitation rights and share the kids and everything else, but don't turn around and call it marriage, because marriage to me is a religious right.
It's not a civilian right.
If
you think about marriage, it was ordained by God and set up that way. Okay?
Yeah.
As a Christian. See, my view comes that way. People may or may not like it. That's not my problem. I don't hide what I believe.
Well, no, the founding fathers wrote, we are
legislate what I don't legislate what I believe either, but I do share it with people.
Well,
that's
now,
one of the reasons we did all the outreach work we did, was to share, basically to help them, but also to share our faith at the same time. But I didn't take it down there with a jackhammer and try to shove it down someone's throat.
Well, now, the reason why I brought this up, this came in the news yesterday, and when I heard this, I just sat back and did a WTF, and F is not for fun. The chaplains in the military, there are certain individuals that are atheists that want to serve as chaplains. Now, how can you explain an atheist being a chaplain?
I don't know. How can you explain some of the people that are on pulpits today that believe these things they believe? They're in essence atheists themselves. They change the Bible like you change your socks. Well, I hope people change their socks, but nevertheless, that's how they do it, and they do it in the name of God. They stand on the pulpit and ordain all kinds of crazy things. And when you say, well, the Bible says this, they say to you, that was then, this is now. That's the theology they have today. One of the reasons I was at a meeting the other night. You ever heard of the black robe movement?
There's something is in the back of my mind. It's
actually how the revolution started. It was off the pulpits. Okay? And a lot of statements were made even back then and even up to this day that if this country ever went down the toilet, it would be because of the church not telling the truth any longer. Well, guess what?
Prophecy has been fulfilled. Yeah, that is exactly what is happening.
Yeah,
you've got
the church
a lot of
has gotten silent. The church is afraid of losing its tax-deductible thing. It never that it was supposed to have one, but it's afraid of losing money. And I think somewhere in the Bible says the root of all evil is the love of money. Not money, but the love of it. And they've fallen in love with money so much and power so much that they no longer preach the truth off the pulpits. Therefore, they've got a bunch of people sitting in churches that wouldn't know God if he walked in and rode on a white horse.
We got Mr. Magic back on. Mr. Magic, you're back, so if you want to try your question again.
Okay. First of all, just a one-liner on the last comment there. There's a huge, huge problem in America with what I call religion, okay? And, you know, I am a born-again Christian. Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior. I have love for him in my heart, and I have faith in him every day, and I talk to him every day. And it's not a religion, okay?
No.
That was not my original question. That was not my original question. No, my original question, I'll try to keep it real quick here, is that I'm sure the majority of the people here understand that the root of the global financial crisis is big banking and has become a global thing, okay? Not just a United States thing or a China thing. It's all interconnected, okay? So my question here at this point is, do you understand, and this is for your guest caller, do you understand, sir, what a derivative is, okay, and how it is going to affect the coming financial global economic crisis, a derivative? Can you just, in a couple sentences, go ahead.
Ben?
Is he talking to me or to my cool mic?
No, to you, Ben. You're
talking about the stock market?
No, I'm talking about the global economics of derivatives. Do you understand what a derivative is and how it's going to affect the global economy, which includes the United States?
We're going to go to the global economy.
We're going to go to derivatives.
In the global economy.
Right.
I personally believe, and I know a lot of people don't like this, and I say it all the time, we are the global economy. I believe the global economy to some degree is a farce that's been laid on us by a lot of people like the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, and others to make us feel like we can no longer control our own destiny. I take that to be a no-brainer. We can. Without us, there is no economy anywhere in the world. That's been proven over and over again. All we need to do is straighten out our own economy. We need to straighten out and have a real energy plan. Energy program, drill for oil, drill for natural gas. We don't need to do anything other than that, and that'll solve all of our problems, although I know a lot of people don't believe that. But if you take with the companies I used to work for in California, because so much of what we did depended on energy, both in getting our raw materials to us to manufacture them, the manufacturing of them took energy, and the shipping them back out took energy. We were anywhere from 35% to 50% of our costs were factored right into energy, and that's true of anything in that business. If we can get our energy costs under control back the way they're supposed to be, we will have full employment in this country again. You will have a thriving middle class, and then you won't have all the problems we're having. But that will not happen until and unless we have an energy policy to back it up. And that's drilling for oil and using natural gas for both power and for vehicles and, say, all the fleets that we have in this whole country. Hertz Rent-A-Car, all of them. That's my stand on that.
What about these biofuel where they're using all the corn instead of going towards food and
corn,
feed?
Corn, you realize how much energy it takes to make a gallon of corn as far as fuel, ethanol? It's not worth the effort.
No.
I mean,
no.
When you take the energy it takes just to plant the corn and to harvest. I know my family lives in the Midwest on farms, and they do corn, and they're not real happy with what I talk about this way. We don't need ethanol. Why do people think some of the prices have gone up so much? We're taking what used to be feed corn for cattle and for other uses in flour and things, and we're now putting it in gas tanks.
Yeah, and it doesn't burn.
That drives the cost of all of our food up.
Yeah, and it doesn't burn cleaner. And this was done underneath Cool Mike's favorite person, Bush, back in 2007. Well, they also have the other biofuel they're making out of, like, wood chips and stuff. And 2007, this stuff didn't even exist, but they put into law legislation that mandated it must be used in fuel at a certain amount when the technology didn't even exist when the law was written. Now, does this make sense at all?
Not to me.
No. Right now, we're driving around with 10 ethanol, which is 10% ethanol to
right.
regular gasoline.
Right.
And they're going to mandate by, I believe, in 2 years that it goes up to E15, 15% ethanol to 85% gasoline. Do you know
not
how many
good.
Cars are going to start breaking down? How
I
many
know,
people?
But they're not manufacturing cars to handle ethanol. You can't do that. All we need to do is, you know, the new natural gas find they found in Pennsylvania a few months back, about a year or so, I think it was.
Yeah.
It's enough for 100 and some years, I think, maybe 180 years.
Mm-hmm.
Plus what you've got in Colorado, which is another. We've got almost 300 years or plus that of natural gas, just natural gas.
Mm-hmm.
We've got over 2,000 years of oil in the ground at today's use. That's saying we don't get any better than what we are right now today. We don't make cars any better, any lighter. We don't become any more fuel efficient. We don't build homes that are really energy efficient, like using really great insulation in them, you know, instead of the crap they use to keep their costs down. If we would do what we're supposed to do, if you would take natural gas, like I said, and just put it in all your fleet vehicles, whether they're gas companies, electric companies, Hertz Rent-A-Car, all the fleet, buses, all of them, right? You'd cut your fuel use, your gas use, by over 30% in this country, not to mention clean up the air. Now, what do you think that would do to the price of gasoline?
It would make it drop completely.
And then if you drill for oil along with that and got oil back down to $40-some dollars a barrel, what do you think that would do to the price of gasoline?
You'd probably be paying about 25 cents a gallon.
Well, you'd probably be about a buck, because they'll never go back down to a quarter, although I'd love it. But nevertheless, so if it now it's at three, say here we just paid $3.20 last night for a gallon of gas. So if that would say, just say it would bring it down to a dollar and a half, right?
Mm-hmm.
That cuts it by about 55%. What do you think that would do to a loaf of bread?
It would bring the price of everything completely down.
Gosh. And what do you think that would do to manufacturing in this country?
You know, they're saying that, in three places, if they drill in Anwar, Bakken Valley, and Green River, those three, it would create 9 million jobs and give us enough fuel to keep the country going, make us completely independent, I think, for like the next 200 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just three locations. Now you add in all the other places that we have it available. You know, what's his name? New Jersey, the new governor, Christie.
Right.
He had them stop drilling for gas because he wants to investigate the fracking policy.
He's a liberal.
Yeah. He's a rhino.
I know he is. That's what I'm saying. He is a rhino, and everybody knows it. He's another Scott Brown.
And
people don't want to accept that's what he is, but that's what he is.
No, not at all. Not at all. You're listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I want to welcome everyone into the chat room. See, a lot of our friends are in there, so welcome aboard. Our call-in line is open. It's 917-889-3675. I'm your host, Ann, the radio chick. We got Cool Mike, my co-host, with us, and our guest is Van, the radio man, who has his own show up here on BTR. He's also running for Senate in Arizona, and you can find him on his website, which is vanforussenate.com. And you also have another website that you gave me, crossroadswithvan.com. So feel free to call in and ask Van some of your questions. So, Van, how is your campaign going? I know you got me at an ungodly hour last night, but I want to thank you.
Well, we were down in Sierra Vista, which is Cochise County, at the Republican headquarters there, and we were warmly welcomed by those people. I just told them basically why I'm running and what I believe on certain issues, and they asked me some very good questions. And then I got a couple emails this morning about my stand on the Second Amendment and illegal immigration, because they didn't think it was quite clear enough on my website. So I went in right now and made changes, and I'm in the process of sending it to the web manager to put them up so it's very clear what I think, in case anybody doubts it. But we're running along. We're picking up support. We picked up in Arizona, some states do, some states don't. You have to have so many signatures to get on the ballot, and you have to have so many from each county in this state to get on the ballot. So it's not like you need 6,000. You need 200 in this county, 300 here, 150 there. Actually, we have one county I think we only need 6 in. I don't understand how that worked, but that's how it works. And then we have the county we live in. Of course, you need over 3,300. So we need 6,500 just to qualify, but we're going to need well over 10,000 because I've already been told by the people I'm running against, their supporters, their financial people, that they intend to challenge my signatures, which costs them money, but they're willing to do it, you know, hoping they'll find enough wrong ones so I won't even get on the ballot because they don't want me there. They've already told me that. They do not want me even running in this race.
Which makes you all the more reason why we've got to get out there and support you. Now, we've got a person out here, Mortgage Auditing Service is his screen name, and he wants to know what you're going to do about the foreclosures in Arizona that are mostly illegal.
Well, what do you mean illegal? You mean illegal people getting foreclosed on, or the foreclosures themselves are illegal?
I'm assuming this looks like the foreclosures themselves are illegal.
Does he say why?
That's a good question. Mr. Mortgage, if you're out there, please tap in here or call in as to why you feel these foreclosures are illegal. That's an interesting question.
Yeah, well, you know, I know some people that got foreclosed on simply because they didn't pay their bills.
That's
you know,
a very
I mean,
good...
We own two homes here. We sold one that was free and clear, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're using that money to help finance the campaign. We have a second home that I owe money on, that I make a monthly payment on. And if I don't make the payment, they'll foreclose on it, right? Because I signed a contract, which I believe is binding, to make a payment. I gave them so much down, I got the house. I don't make the payment, they take the house. It's like if I don't make a payment on a car, I don't have one to make. But if I don't, they take the car. I've had people not pay me back, okay, when they borrowed money from me.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they didn't do what I didn't have anything to take back because I lent it to them to help them out. And they just filed bankruptcy on me.
Oh, that's fun. That's
yeah.
A good friend.
Yeah, close to $150,000 all together with all three of them. But, you know, that was, and one of them told me the reason they did it was because I could afford to lose the money.
Oh.
This is a few years back when I was working. I looked at him. I said, nobody can afford to lose money, my friend. I earned that money, and I worked very hard to earn it. Just because I have it to lend doesn't mean I can afford to lose it. I didn't invest it to lose it. I invested it to help you buy a house. Now, you don't want to be a homeowner. You're giving the house back to the bank, and you're not going to pay me. But his analogy was that you could afford to lose it.
Okay. Well, we've got a caller. I hope this is Mr. Magic. If he's got something on in the background, if he can turn that off. Area code 815.
What's that?
Hello. Hi.
Yeah, 815. Who am I speaking to?
This is Brian from that mortgage auditing service.
Oh, all right. So you can ask the question directly because we're not understanding it.
Oh, okay. Well, basically, essentially, it's been proven since the market crash has happened in real estate that the banks are truly not the real parties of interest in the foreclosure process. Since the securitization process has happened, what they've done, in that whole process, actually, they've separated the deed and the note and the mortgage. Now, under real estate law, the two have to be contained together, and it's called adhesion, okay? Now, the problem with the whole foreclosure process and since the market crash, media has been blaming it on people going out and get loans and so on and blah, 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 that they couldn't afford, okay? Well, that's a big misconception and is a real form of, I don't know what you would call it. It's just leading people into thinking something that's not exactly true because the bankers have an obligation to investigate your paperwork that you turn in saying your income is X amount of money and blah, 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 that you can afford the house that you're applying for. So they actually have an obligation to not even give you the loan in the first place if you can't afford it and truly investigate the background of your application and so on, whether you are rightfully and gainfully employed and make the generate the income that you say you do and so on. And if some of you remember, there were positions with banks that, they were handing out loans like they were giving cookies to five-year-olds. That being generally the whole thing that part of the securitization that caused the whole bubble to burst in the first place. So Arizona has been severely beaten along with California, Nevada, and Florida in the foreclosure process, where they're actually wrongfully and contractually evicting people under UCC rules. So what Arizona needs is somebody that's going to stand up and say, hey, to the banks and so on, wait a minute, do you even have a right to foreclose and do this to the people? Because people are ending up homeless, and, a lot of people that are ending up homeless have nowhere to go. So then at that point in time, what happens to these people? Their kids get taken away from them by DCFS because, you know, the parents have nowhere to turn to in some cases. And that's, you know, just I think, a real big concern to a lot of Americans that, you know, there's going to be somebody in power somewhere eventually to stand up for him and quit accusing him of, you know, totally. I mean, and not to say that there isn't people out there that didn't go out and forge these kind of papers and to get a house they couldn't afford. I mean, sure, it happens. But, you know, $10 trillion worth of mortgages, you know, or, well, that's the damages, but they were saying $800 million plus dollars or billion dollars in home loans were given up to people that couldn't afford them? I don't think so.
Isn't this something that should then go to an attorney general? I don't think this would be something that goes into the Senate, is it?
Yeah.
Van, what's your response?
That's their control.
Pardon me?
What would be your response to this?
He said something. What was it you said at the very end?
Well, it's a control issue on every level. I mean, it's, you know, between the Senate and everybody in GOP. I mean, it's you know, the responsibility of everybody.
A lot of the banks that you're talking about are not federally controlled. Am I correct?
No, all the top five too big to fail.
No, I'm not talking about those. I'm talking about the smaller ones that have some of these loans as well. The Fed, I don't agree with to begin with. I think the Fed needs to be dissolved, quite frankly, because it's not part of the federal government to begin with. It's owned by private banks, and it's unconstitutional. They're not allowed to print our money for us. We're supposed to take care of that ourselves, and they're not allowed to issue money. This is something that the Congress has sat back and allowed to happen for the last 100 or so years, approximately, give or take a few, and should not be going on any longer. We should go back to return to state banks as North Dakota has. But as far as what you're talking about some foreclosures are illegal, I'm sure some of them are, because I know some people that have had problems. I also realize that some of them aren't, just due to people defaulting on loans. I've seen people walk away from loans here just because they could afford to walk away. They went and bought another house and walked away from the bigger debt, which, you know, that's a moral judgment personally, but that's not mine to make.
Yeah, well, we just recently had a case that got ruled in favor of the homeowner. The gentleman happens to be a Marine. He was originally stationed, I believe, out in Arizona, and he came over here to South Carolina, to Beaufort, to one of the bases here, but he was also deployed overseas in the War on Terror. And at that point, his mortgage company was asking him every 30 days to verify that he's deployed. Do you know how much paperwork this guy had to do while he's in the middle of the desert fighting terrorists out in Afghanistan and Iraq?
I'll tell you something. The military, the so-called management arm of the military should have handled this. And they don't do it very well.
They went after, I believe it was Wells Fargo was the bank that was doing this, and they went after the bank because the bank did foreclose on the man's home. And he was part of the class action lawsuit. He brought it up, and then it turned out there was a lot of other military people that were being subjected to this. I believe Citibank was doing this, Bank of America, and Wells Fargo, and Wells Fargo being the biggest culprit on it. And they were able to get it ruled in favor of the homeowners that got foreclosed on. I mean, there are there are illegal practices out there, but this is what I believe. You're right. We got to go back to state banks, get the Fed out of it,
right.
Get government out of these transactions.
Right.
Well, you know what the profit was of the North Dakota Bank a year? I think it was last year, because they have a state bank.
Yeah.
I think it was between $120 and $150 million dollars, right?
Mm-hmm.
They gave that money. That money went to the state because it's a state bank. That money was used to work on schools, infrastructures, roads, whatever. It wasn't given to some corporation somewhere outside the country, outside the state. It all stayed in the state, and they charge transaction fees and whatever. That's how it should be done now. We need that system brought back.
Right, and I think taking these, you know, like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and them guys. See, the problem, and also the problem is, and it's not, you don't even have to be in foreclosure, in the first place through this whole fiasco. 85% of the loans between, 2005 and 09, you know, were securitized.
Yeah.
So anybody essentially between that time that's bought a house, and even if you're not in foreclosure, the bank has actually resold your notes illegally off through the stock market, and they've been paid for your house 5 to 10-plus times over already. So the payments that you're making to your house...
Are you a member of a group, by the way, out of curiosity?
No, I, you know, I just, I used to work in the music business, so I started a little assistance thing trying to help people in foreclosure, and just trying to reach out to people to say, hey, this is what's going on, how it's happening, and so on. And I just, I happen to be, have a personal attachment to Arizona as well, because, you know,
here.
I lived there 13 years, and I'll be moving back there hopefully soon. So, you know, when I heard that you were running down there, I was, you know, I'll be moving down to the Phoenix area.
I am definitely running.
Yeah.
I would, so, I'd like to get on that subject for a minute if I could.
Oh. Yeah, go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, we were talking about running against all the money I'm running against, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And I am. I mean, there's no doubt of that. My question is to your listeners is this, to any of them, wherever they are in any part of the country. You've got people in your state, as I am in mine, that are running against the party, more or less, because they're not going to go with the flow. And my challenge to all people that listen to this program, all Americans, I'm not talking to Democrats or Republicans or independents, I'm just talking to Americans. If we could actually get people in this country, like in our campaign in Arizona, if I could get 1 million people across the country to send me $2 one time, I could beat these people like a drum. And no one's going to tell me there aren't 1 million people out there that can't afford to send me $2.
No, as a matter of fact, I just put your site back up on the chat room, vanforussenate.com. And the other site, I have to keep on looking at this because it's too long, crossroadswithvan.com. Right.
The one to really go to is the vanforussenate.com. See, that was my question last night at the meeting I was at, and we got 60-some signatures, which we needed to go back to that. Some people gave us some money. Other people said, I'm going to take your petitions out. We're going to have all your you're going to have all the signatures you need in this county. We're going to take care of that for you so you don't have to keep coming down here and doing it. Because these are things we have to do as candidates. Now, I don't have the money to spend to hire people to go get signatures for me. I got to spend money on other things like pamphlets, brochures, gas, you know, that kind of thing. Little necessities of life that take me from point A to point B. And I understand the economy nationwide is tough. I really do. But I told Cool Mike this one time, too. I don't know where they've taken it yet. I've told some people here in Arizona the same thing. I believe that if the American public would get off its tail and look in their garage or their child's room for all the junk toys they have and go to their storage place that they're paying $150 a month for that they don't need and all have a bunch of garage sales, we would make the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, and Soros look like poor people. We could then afford to actually support people that are willing to do this work. Because if you really want to think about this, George Washington was a great general, right?
Right.
Why?
He knew how to muster his forces.
No, he had forces to muster.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Without volunteers, he wouldn't have been a great general. You're only a great general when you got someone to lead.
Yeah,
you can be the best general in the world without an army. You got nowhere to go. Mark Anthony proved that with Cleopatra. Remember the war?
Yeah.
His army left, he lost. So
mm-hmm.
The army is what makes the great general. It's not that you don't have great ideas, but if nobody follows them, it doesn't work. So I know other conservatives like in Pennsylvania and Price and some others, without the funds to do what they need to do, they're volunteering to shut their own lives down because my wife and myself were out till about 10:30 last night. All right? So we spent about 14 hours doing this yesterday in one day. We've been out sometimes till 2:30 in the morning doing this, and we've started like at 7 in the morning. So we're willing to put our lives on hold and volunteer. My question to the American public, and that's who I'm talking to, the American public, what are you willing to volunteer to make sure we can get this done? Because talk, quite frankly, and we both know this, dear, is cheap. My father always used to tell me that. Talk's cheap.
Amen.
Right.
Okay? Or other people say, show me the money.
Right.
We've put up money to do this and time and some people not liking us very much, but they didn't like me very much anyway. So that's not a great loss. My real question to the American public, to your listeners and others who may replay this later, as well as my own, because I talked to them about this, when are they going to step up to the plate and go without a Coke for one day, or a McDonald's burger, or a slice of pizza, or a pack of cigarettes, or a shot, or a cup of coffee, or a donut? When are they going to step up and start helping these people that they say, please run, and then don't help them? It's like sending a lamb to slaughter. I watched this happen last year with two guys in this state. John McCain beat them like a drum with 20-some million dollars to their three. Now, I don't believe I'm going to have that problem this year. Plus, I'm not running against John McCain. I'm running against a congressman that's not real popular in his own district and someone nobody else knows. That's what people need to understand. This isn't the John McCain race. This is me against them, and they aren't that well. One of them definitely isn't well-known. The other one isn't well-liked. But they do have money. So that's the battle here. I've got the issues, and I know it. I know that by the event we had last night. When you're talking to people that are anywhere from their 30s up to their 80s, and they stay and listen to you and then shake your hand, and when you got women that are in their 70s taking 3 and 4 and 5 petitions and say, I'm going to go walking door to door. Now, think about the age of these people, right? I'm going to go walk door to door and get signatures for you. This is what kids should be doing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When I get money from people who are on Social Security that have an income of $1,500 to give me a $20 or $50 bill, what does that tell you about people that are on jet skis or have $80 a month cable bills? Okay? That disturbs me. The American public has got to start learning freedom ain't free. And if you want these changes done, if you want your country back, you got to get off your butt and do something. Or you ain't going to get it back. And I'll tell you something. I really believe this. This is it for us this year. We not only got to win the presidency back, we got to take over the Congress and the Senate with real conservatives. Because if we don't, these people are going to bury us. All of us. And I don't want to go there. That's why I'm doing this. That's why we're taking the time and spending the money, the little money we have to do this. Because $100,000 isn't much money.
No, it's not. It's not at all. And I want to remind everyone that I put up in the chat room the link. It's vanforussenate.com or crossroadswithvan.com. I also put up in the chat room the link to your BTR show. You'll find Van here on BTR. He's Van the Radio Man. Do you have anything special coming up on your show? I know you've got the interview tonight.
I've got on Thursday on Crossroads with Van at 4:30. On blog, because it's simulcast with Blog Talk. We're going to have Travis Grantham on. He's a captain in the Air Guard. He's presently, I can't tell you where he's serving, but it's somewhere in the Middle East. He's going to do a live interview call-in from the Middle East, and he's going to tell us what's really going on over there, which is a first. That's a first. Nobody's ever done this, not with a regular guy. You know, they go talk to the general, right? Or they do talk to a news reporter. They don't talk to the guy that's from Arizona, and he's running for Congress, by the way. He's another guy running for Congress as a conservative. In fact, he's running for Flake's old seat, okay, against three other people over there. One is a former congressman. The other two are former legislators. This guy's a novice, a total novice, and I like him. I've had him on the show live, great conservative, good ideas, willing to do the work, you know. And he's one of the people that's joining me with his contract with America. That's the point. These are the kind of people that will serve this country. He's already serving it. I believe myself and my wife have served it to some degree with the work we did on Skid Row and other things. But that, setting that aside, it's time for the American public to start serving this country.
That is so true, and that's why I'm putting up the links for everyone out there. I also put the link up for your BTR show so they can see you up on Facebook and Twitter. You know, I do recommend everyone out there, do like Van said, take $2 out of your wallet and send it to candidates just like Van. Send it to Van. Send it to the other conservative candidates that are running against the rhinos and get conservatives back in.
Yeah. We can take the Republican Party back and make it something worth having.
Van, what happened to the Republican Party? A lot of people on BTR think it's never been better. What happened?
What, are they crazy?
Yeah, they are crazy. Well, they're Republicans. They're under an illusion that somehow the Republican
Party... Ask them what the national debt is and how we got here. I realize, you know, Mr. Obama brought us here on a jet ski, right? But Mr. Bush was bringing us here on a pretty fast boat, too.
Wait a minute. Hang on a second. Van, do you mean to tell me?
Here we go.
Bush, America's primetime great president, was not a fiscal, monetarily conservative Republican?
Not with anybody's stretch of anybody's imagination could you believe that.
Wow.
You fight an unfunded war. You pass a drug program. You don't veto one damn bill in 8 years, right? You say you're going to drill for oil. You don't do it. You talk tough on the banks. You don't follow through. You got a wife that's pro-choice, pro-homosexual gay rights, and you're telling me this guy's a conservative. What value system are you from? You almost sound like a Democrat.
At the very worst,
a socialist progressive Democrat.
Well, one thing I got to say, we are lucky that we're only stuck with a two-term president. You know, thank God that we don't have the perpetuality.
Yeah,
we're stuck
with some 3- and 4- and 5- and 6-term senators and congressmen.
That has to stop.
That's where the real evil lies.
Well, and that's very true, what Van just said. You know, the checks and balances, when it continues to be corrupt, there are no checks and balances.
Well, and there aren't any now. They just raised our debt ceiling, right?
They just recently did.
And now we're, what, another $300 and some billion in debt since then?
Mm-hmm.
And they're getting ready to do some more stupid things in the name of financial responsibility?
Yeah, we pay China $100 million per day in interest.
Yeah, well, China's not our problem. Our problem is right here. You know, that's another problem. They've got us watching everything in the world except ourselves. I want someone to answer me this. Why are we spending so much money on Germany with our forces there or Japan when our own streets aren't safe?
That's a good question, because, Van, I don't know if you remember, I'm a retired New York City cop, and my hands were tied many times.
Yeah,
you
well,
know,
I want to
revolving
a lot
door
of
justice, we call it.
No, I'll give them a revolving door.
Oh, Van, we're kind of winding down, Van. You want to give a closing statement here and reach out to the listeners and kind of give maybe a 2-minute
close? Well, I'll give you one too, Mike. You need to call me one of these days. I want to talk to you about something, because I got some free time I'm not using right now, for one thing. Secondly, the American public, listen to me clearly on this. If you want your country back, then you've got to help us take it back. I know other people running for the Senate and Congress that are conservatives. Their party is not in their corner. They do not. They have come to me and asked me not to run more than once. In fact, they want another meeting again with me. They have put every stumbling block they can in my way to keep me from getting things I'm perfectly entitled to have, as the other candidates had, to make my run easier by having information to contact people. It took me 4 weeks to get something I should have had in 3 minutes. That doesn't exactly help me run the race real well. It's like running a 100-yard dash backwards. This is not fun. My wife and myself enjoy what we're doing. We enjoy meeting people. I enjoy talking to them. I enjoy watching hope come back in the face of people that are old enough to be my parents, all right, and some young people as well. But it's up to you, as the American public, to begin to start supporting people that support you and your country. Because if you don't start it, you're not going to have a damn thing to hand your kids or your grandkids or your great-grandchildren. Leaving them money that they're going to end up having to burn in the fireplace isn't exactly a good idea. So I implore you once again, think about the dollar, the $2, the $3, and for some of you it could be a lot more than that. Think about me, sure, I want the money. If you've got someone else to give it to, give it to them. We need your help. We. Remember, we, us, united, us, we. This isn't an I or a me thing. It's an us. I'm coming out of retirement to voluntarily do this. I need you to volunteer to help us. So do others. So that's my pitch to you. VanForUSSenate.com. Give us a hand. You give me a hand, I'll help other people. Because that's what we've done for years. I've helped people get an office that are conservatives, want to help some more. But you have to help us so we can help them. If you don't help us, then whatever happens in this country, I'll be honest with you, is your fault, not mine.
That's true.
So it's not mine, because you ain't going to tell me I didn't try to do this. I'm old enough now where I shouldn't have to be up 20 hours a day doing this stuff. But I'm willing to do it and actually have quite a bit of energy for it and enjoy it. But I'd enjoy it a whole lot more if there was more money in the bank, quite honestly. Because then I could compete. I want to beat these two yokels like a drum. I really do. Because I believe both of them are no talent nitwits. Okay? I don't have anything against them personally. I just don't believe they can serve this country properly. The one has proven it by his 10 years and lied after, I'll leave after three terms, which is six, so he's 4 years past due, actually five now. And the other one who's never served anything. But all
Van,
of a sudden,
we got 15 seconds left.
Hey, send us your money.
Thanks, Van.
And Mike, do the garage sales.
I'm working on it, Van. I'm working on it.
Working ain't good enough. Get it done. Production's all that matters.
Amen, brother. I will get it done.
All right.
Van, you're always welcome back here.
Give me a call anytime.
All right. It has been fun. It has been a pleasure. I just had to sit back and enjoy the whole afternoon.
So have I. Just think I got to go now at 5 o'clock and meet someone I've never met.
Give him hell, Van. Give him hell.
Well,
I'll give him whatever
go.
He'll let me. I'll give him whatever I have left.
I got to go work this straw poll.
Okay.
Well, on behalf of Van the Radio Man and Annie of Southern Sense, Annie, you want to take it from here?
Well, we're actually in the after-the-hour show, so anyone listening in will hear it in the podcast that's been listening online. But I want to thank Van, and I want to thank Mike. I want to thank all the fantastic callers and the people that were up in the chat room. We had a fantastic chat room going. I know some people came late, but they can catch it in the podcast. And again, Van is welcome back anytime. It was a pleasure, and thank you for bailing me out when I lost my guest from laryngitis. So you've been listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I want to thank everyone again, and we will be back on Friday. We're going to have Frank Aquila, and he's going to be talking about his book about Sarah Palin, Out of Nowhere. And we'll have fun with that. So enjoy your week, and have a great evening. Thank you, everyone.
Good afternoon. Bye.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.web.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American. American.